gentlemen, may I have your attention?
Hello and welcome to another episode of Radio Teco. My name is Monty Rossetti and I'm here with Alexis Terrazas. Alexis, I'm going to ask you two questions. First off, as always, how are you doing? And then also, tell us a little bit about our amazing guest today.
Gracias, Monty, for that. I really appreciate always being here with you, man. You're one of my favorite people in this world. But I'm doing really well, man. Another day here with my family and doing work on the newspaper that I love, and of course this podcast, you know. So, but the guest that we have today is somebody that we've been really wanting to highlight and provide a platform to, and that's Gabriela Lopez. Gabriela is the president of the San Francisco Board of Education, and you know, to say that herself and the rest of the board have been under scrutiny or have had challenges is an understatement. And we feel like, or at least I feel, you know, given this pandemic and where we're at and with schools in San Francisco gradually reopening, it was a really, really good time to allow Gabriela a platform to say, you know, to respond to our questions, of course, but to kind of, you know, say whatever she needs to say during this really, really important and pivotal time in our country, in our city. You know, and I think, you know, I'm hoping we always want our listeners to learn something from these episodes. And if anything, you know, I hope that, you know, some people will really see that, you know, we'll come again to value our educators, but really see like the humanity, you know, behind people, especially those in leadership positions who are really trying to do, you know, good work.
No, yeah, I want to say a couple of things before you toss us over to the interview. First off, a nice plug for El Tecolote newspaper, our newspaper. You can check it out at eltecolote.org, or just, you know, subscribe, get your subscription, or if you're walking around the mission at any amazing shop there, you'll see a pile of El Tecolote newspapers. Pick it up and get the most current issue. And then the second thing I wanted to say is, yes, I'm really happy that Gabriela Lopez was able to take the time in her busy, busy, stressful schedule to make time for us. I agree. I think I say it. I'm going to say this a few more times, how corny I am when it comes to messaging. But I'm hoping that people get a positive message from Gabriela Lopez in this episode. And you know, for people in the future that want to run for positions like the president of the San Francisco Board of Education, let them know that, yes, it does come with obstacles, but they should do it because we need to hear voices of everybody, you know, women, people of color, everybody.
Awesome, Monty. Well said. And now, listeners, listen to Gabriela Lopez.
Today we have Gabriela Lopez, the president of the San Francisco Board of Education. Gabriela, first off, my most important question, how are you doing today?
Today is a good day. Today I've not been bombarded with any crazy news, and our schools are opening up on a weekly basis, so I'm seeing more and more people feeling hopeful, and that helps me feel really good.
That's good. I'm happy to hear that you're having a good day. Again, I know, I mean, taking this day by day is probably your motto these last few days. But let's rewind to many days ago, 2018. You were the youngest elected official in San Francisco. And also, I still can't believe this, the first bilingual elected official. How was it for you to accomplish these amazing milestones?
Well, first, you know, even covering this like day by day madness has been really tricky. So when I think about when this all started, it honestly feels like 10 years ago. Like I feel like I've aged in the past 3 months. And so that all of that hard work and the honor that I felt to be in this space seems like a different lifetime. But, you know, I think reflecting on that and being given the opportunity to do that is kind of a nice reminder of why we're in this work. When I ran, I was also the only full-time public school teacher. So it was campaign. It meant campaigning before and after school every single weekend. And I was up against a lot of opposition. So if you imagine what we're dealing with now as a school board, at the time it was similar in that people just didn't take me seriously. So I think that was another opportunity to really elevate the much needed voice in this space and the understanding that the people who are in our classrooms, the people who are living the day-to-day policies that we are setting as a school board and as leaders should be given a space, should be given a voice. And I tie that to a number of reasons why I even began teaching in the first place, which is, you know, rooted in my experience as a public school student in LAUSD, my experience as a first generation daughter of Mexican immigrants, their inability to communicate with teachers. So many reasons why I was here in the first place.
And talking about your involvement with the board, you know, I remember back in 2018, you know, we ran a story of you winning that election, and it was a grassroots, female women led effort to get you elected. What was the motivation behind getting involved? From teacher to serving on the Board of Education.
Well, one, I do want to say I still have that story framed in my hallway. It's my greatest achievement, and I really appreciate that coverage. And what brought it again was this, it was right after the 2016 election when Trump got elected, and there was a wave of candidates, new, fresh candidates who were motivated to run for office. And I think back to my participation as an educator in SFUSD. When I first started teaching in the school district, I was the arts coordinator at my school site. I was a union representative at our school. I was active throughout the district. I'm a core member of Teachers for Social Justice, and we've, through that, provide many resources, an annual conference, a space for like-minded educators across the Bay Area to build in within the social justice mindset and really talk about what that means in the classroom. So I was in a number of spaces. Even my volunteerism at San Quentin State Prison, which was just this whole other perspective of the value of education, education for education's sake and what that means for people. So tying all of that in to this space in local politics, it was a shock for me to find out that there was a Board of Education. And I have to admit my ignorance. As a child, I didn't realize that there was a board that created policies that affected me as a student. As a voter, I didn't do my research. I was that person, right? And it awakened me to a number of understandings that I didn't have. I remember the moment that I realized the work that the Board of Education did, who they were, what their values were. I told myself that could be something I envision doing 10 to 20 years from now. This was January of 2017, so a year before I actually ended up running. And that kind of thinking is also just the idea that we aren't ready for a couple of years to be in something that's really important. So that same year, 2017, I was asked to run by my colleagues and close friends in Teachers for Social Justice who have been doing this work for a long time. And I thought it was a ridiculous idea. I really didn't envision myself. I didn't think I had enough experience. I didn't think I had the knowledge. And basically tapping into all of the insecurities that I still hold. But just even the idea of me being in that space it really felt ridiculous. So it took some time. And I've heard that with candidates, especially women and women of color, it's being asked over and over again before we finally say yes. But I have to admit, just given the realities, given everything I've had to give up, it's been really hard. It's been really challenging on my own just like life. And I keep trying to navigate how to encourage people to keep doing this work. And to think that if I had known what it's like, would I still have ran? And really just reminding myself of, like, again, like, it is such an honor to be in this space. And I'm so grateful to be learning and growing and to be holding that for people and to connect them to the work that we're doing. And how do I continue to motivate myself and motivate others to stay active, given the realities that it be, you know, what our world becomes when we start to make change.
No, I'm happy you said that. We, one of the first series that we did was we talked to 8 different candidates who ran in November. And they were fighting the status quo, kind of like you have been doing. And your story is very similar to their story, because almost every candidate mentioned the president. I don't even want to say his name, the 45, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call him. Mm-hmm. And how that person inspired, like, all these people. So, you know what? Accelerate this dream of, you know what? I can't do it. This isn't for me. All of a sudden, it's like, you know what? I am going to do it. And we just hope that one of the messages people get from this is, you know what, Gabriela Lopez was able to do it. I can do it as well. And just motivate more women, people of color, to get themselves in these positions to actually create change like you've been able to do. So I do want to say thank you for that. And you're talking about the challenges that you've gone through since. Let's just openly ask about what's the current state of the reopenings of schools in San Francisco. And this episode is probably going to come out in a couple of weeks. So if you just kind of want to talk about the long-term plan as well, if you can, of the reopenings of schools in San Francisco.
That's right. So I'll have to step back a little, because of course this planning has been going on for months and months, almost a year now. And one thing that I'm really proud of is the fact that we were able to join forces and get to a place where all of our stakeholders felt comfortable doing this work. And it's continuing to remind people of the fact that we are being asked to return under the most dire working conditions no one has ever realized, right? And it is still a pandemic, and it is still asking people to risk their lives. And I understand that we are, of course, in a space where there's so many more safety protocols, tools, the vaccines are expanding so that we can really be safer in our world today. But that is exactly what we were asking people to do, students, families, staff. So the fact that, yes, it took a really long time, and yes, it meant going through so many hundreds and hundreds of details and planning to get to a point where we all felt comfortable, it did happen. And we were one of the first school districts that were able to do that in a way that was in partnership with our educators. So I really value the ability to hold on to that, despite the pressures that we were getting, despite the criticism. Many of these remarks were coming from places and people who didn't understand that in school experience. And that's the other thing that I keep having to tap into and again remind people of. Our public school systems have consistently let us down, especially communities of color. We've seen our own school facilities, like, not be the safest spaces. And to think, like, that is the place where we will be going back to learning in a pandemic, on top of so many other issues that we haven't been able to clear. Like, we had to shift to become a true partner in a school district that is telling our stakeholders, telling everybody who's in our buildings, we're doing everything possible to show you transparently and clearly how seriously we will take this process. And that means tons of safety protocols that will not be the regular learning experience we've all understood it to be, but it combines this need to be together, to learn together and support the social emotional aspect, and also the safety standards that are required to work during this time. So now we've opened up all of our elementary schools except for 2, because some specific buildings had a few details that needed to be hashed out. On Monday, the 26th, we will be opening our 3rd wave of schools, and that's specific to our older youth, middle school and high school students who fall into different focal populations that would benefit from being in person. And again, as a school district, we've made it clear we want to prioritize the people who need it the most. And through this sort of wave of opening schools, we're learning each week what works best to build up and be able to offer it to everyone. But it does begin with helping the students who have the highest needs and then building out. That's what we say we're about. We want to do it in an equitable way. And so by next Monday, thankfully, again, with our educators, we've come to the a negotiation that works for all of us. We will be opening our doors for middle school and high school students who are newcomer students, who live in public housing, who are foster youth, live in single room occupancies, who have showed limited engagement, really emphasizing the need to first support those who would benefit most from being in person, learning from that, and then continuing to open up.
Man, well, thank you for all of that. I can't say that enough. And I will start here by saying that these views are my own and not necessarily any of the other guests on here. But Gabriela, for me, like kind of seeing what all of you have been going through these last few months, especially with this reopening effort, it was kind of crazy to me to see how during the pandemic we went from somehow like we're all in this together to some people having this mindset of like, hey, go back, you guys are lazy. And I feel, and you know, in terms of like teachers, right? And I feel like you're in a very unique position as a former educator in SFUSD. You know, I'm sure you taught like classes of Black and Brown kids and ensuring like all these protocols were in place. I basically have two questions. Why was it important? Like you already laid out a little bit about what needed to happen before getting to this point. As you know, from the lens of an educator who teaches these children of color, you know, why was that so important? And why was it also important to look after the best interests also of educators who haven't been supported in the past by like the public school system?
Well, I think the main thing to point out is, of course, who has been affected by the pandemic the most. And when you take a community of people that unfortunately are in segregated school systems, there are going to be educators who are more at risk than others. There are going to be families who are more at risk than others, and it'll just continue the cycle. So it really meant looking at it at a high level with the lens of the experts who are educators and taking an approach that is equitable and open and safe for everyone. The other piece that I was reminding people during this entire discussion, again, from my educator perspective, is what we're returning to is kind of an old approach to effective learning environments. Like, because of the circumstances, unfortunately, there will be no group collaboration. There will be no engaging with other classrooms and talking and spending time with other groups. There will be no, that like desks are looking forward and the teacher is in front of the classroom. Like, we've spent decades moving away from that kind of learning environment, understanding the benefits of being able to move freely and collaborate, and that's all gone. And the other thing that I think about a lot is there are a lot of disciplinary issues that tend to affect our Black and Brown students the most. And with the number of protocols that add a layer of rules and procedures, what is that process going to look like when we return, and who will be affected if we haven't supported our teachers through it, if there's this layer of fear, if students simply don't feel comfortable wearing it, but we have to, and like explaining that and talking with our families takes a lot of time. So I think that's why this whole process, not only is it extremely important, it's a matter of showing everyone we value your life. That's the bottom line. And I understand how much hurt we're all feeling, no matter your privilege or your circumstances during the pandemic. I completely understand we're all dealing with trauma, but because of the perspectives that we all have and our ability to really listen to all voices, to hear from people who don't tend to speak up, who can't come to our meetings, who don't have the ability to email us, we are on the ground listening to them. And I hold that. And, you know, there was an attempt by this board in November to really open up our schools in using the lens that I've just explained and really pushing for everything that we've implemented to help us get to where we are today. But it was also during a time that the cases were skyrocketing. We just felt like far from safe. San Francisco was in the worst space during the pandemic. So it sent the message to educators that we're not taking this seriously, or we're not really abiding by what we say we believe in. And again, what I spent this entire year, the past 3 months of being president, is building that trust, reaching out to people, ensuring that we are here to listen, we are here to work together. We need the people in these spaces to deliver the education that we're now seeing is so valuable. So number of things that it took to get to where we are.
No, thank you for saying that. And I think one of the things that have been the chatter on social media has been comparing San Francisco's reopening process to other major cities around the country. What do you have to say about all those comparisons to the other major cities around the country?
I think it's honestly, a part of it is a distraction, because we've done that work. We've looked into it. It's a number of school districts who are opening around the same time, or who aren't doing the full 5 days. They'll do a hybrid model, or they'll do a half day. I know LAUSD isn't also doing like full day, 5 day classes. Because you have to accommodate so many other pieces, so many people who are willing to come, and those families who aren't, we still have to hold that for them. So I think, like, when I see the comparisons, I also understand that it's everything as of late has been cleverly worded to make it sound like SFUSD is not moving forward in these efforts. And I'll continue to say this, it completely undermines the labor that it's taken from all of us to make this happen. This is day and night, 7 days a week work. This is you don't get to sleep because you're so worried work. And to continue to hear like, it's not enough. I get that, because I get the trauma that we're all working through, and I understand that fear. But it's also not recognizing everything that has been put in place to get here. And it's just a false comparison, in my opinion. I've seen so many of these pushes that make it seem like either we're more or less advanced than anyone else. You're also not taking into consideration the different communities in other cities that are going through a process during the pandemic that is very different from San Francisco and California. Different states have different priorities and ideas and beliefs about the pandemic. And so that too is like, they're in different places entirely. So I hear it. I take it into consideration. I do what I can with the information that I have that's appropriate, but we continue to work with our partners and get to where we need to be as a community in San Francisco.
You articulated a bit, some of the challenges, and I am humbled by just listening to you, day and night work, 7 days a week. If you don't mind, and feel free, if you don't feel comfortable, but what have been some of the biggest challenges for you, as serving as board president and, all the unique challenges this past year?
I was elected president in January of this year. And I think the biggest challenge is it's like more personal, because kind of like the reason why we're prevented from even running to be in this space is, again, all those insecurities that you feel. So once I was elected, within that month, it was basically every week where something pretty drastic for a board to hold was going on. And so at this point, it was the reaction to the renaming, which we inherited as a board, and we just needed to kind of like get through, which is why we even voted on it. It was the city's lawsuit, which sparked others to kind of consider this move of really forcing the reopening without partnering with the school districts that are doing all of this work. No one from the city ever reached out to me, at least, to kind of like walk through this and make a valiant effort before there was this sort of show and political show to get us to do it. There was, of course, the vote, the incident that happened at Lowell, which sparked the urgency to address what's going on at one of our high schools and the work that we've been building on since October and even decades before that many groups have been organizing around. There was at the time the superintendent's message to retire. It just felt like one after the other, there were these big pieces. I can't even remember, but there are these tools that I had to tap into to kind of like help myself work through what we were all holding. And none of that was working anymore. I wasn't like writing. I wasn't leaving my home. Like, so the challenges are like, how do you hold really wanting to be in this space? Because you're here to work, but handling all of the distractions that really make it difficult for you to do it. And when you pair that with literally death threats and rape threats and people coming to your home, it's the reason why we can't be in this space. And I think it just worries me for future leaders. So working through that, it's what's been my focus for the last month. I did take a moment where I just like completely gave up and was like, no, we're not gonna worry about like my own personal development to get through it because there's so much to do. And I was just like fine with that. But now it's, I think, a little bit easier to breathe. And you just got to keep going. The one thing that people tell me over and over, I've heard this over and over, is this is a sign of like positive change and movement that's really affecting people in a way that we've been waiting for. But the abuse is something that I just can't understand. And I think I'm a lot better about ignoring things, but it's just heavy.
I'll let Alexis say the next question. I just want to say something about your response. I know you don't want to take it to a personal level because you don't want to make it about you. But I think we live in a society where you look in the past of these historical figures who broke barriers. And today in 2021, we can look back and admire what they went through and say everything they did was 100% right. Knowing that in the moment, these people were ridiculed, threatened, abused. And to see it still happening today, honestly, is what, and I'm not even in the situation and it triggers me, it affects me. The rabbit holes I've gotten myself into when I read certain things about what's going on. And I can't even imagine what you're going through. So again, I know you don't want to make this personal, but for me, it's something that I'm all about messaging. I'm corny. I'm cliche like that, I guess. But if there's something that I want to get people to get from this is look what you're doing to people. Alexis brought it up saying in the pandemic, when the pandemic started, it was, we're in this together. We're put your freaking mask on. If you're, you know, like, come on, what's going on? Like, let's get this. But for somebody to create a recall to three people of color, two of them women, does question this unity, this false unity that I call. Again, I don't really have a question. I'll let Alexis take this, but I just wanted to say my two cents where I do I see it and I respect what you're going through. Again, I can't even imagine what you're going through. But you know, we're here for you pretty much. That's all I want to say there.
Thank you.
I echo what Monty says. Absolutely. You know, and for this next question, Gabriela, you've already mentioned, you know, some of the distractions from getting like the work done. So if you decline to comment, that's more than okay. But I did want to ask, you know, what's your response, if any, to this ongoing, recall effort between yourself and two other members of the board?
So that's another area that I'm not dedicating the time, because we have so many other really important things. That is actually what I think this recall is about. It's really turning our attention to the board's priorities, which we've been discussing since the beginning of the year and even before. So I understand people's need to be activated and to push back against things they don't agree with. And that's what their right is. And that's what they're doing now. I will continue to focus on where we are as a board, where we need to be, and help us lead the school district in a way that gets all of our students to feel joy and to be excited about learning, whether they choose to do it in person or they want to remain in distance learning.
I think my last question is the reasoning behind the changing of the names of the 44 schools. Now, for me, I see them as two separate situations. I know the names of the schools was mixed in with a bunch of other stuff that was going on. I don't know if I want to say my piece about it. I support it because of a lot of reasons. But again, my opinion here does not matter. What is your reasoning behind the naming of the 44 schools?
Yeah, and I actually want to apologize. I previously said we did inherit it as a board, as in that's why we were covering it, which is fact. Just to kind of round out that work is why the vote happened in January. But I also want to state my full belief in that work and understanding that the reason behind the change is, again, in response to what happened in Charlottesville. It was what a previous board, before we were, any of us except for Mark Sanchez, were on the board, passed. And it's really honoring the work that everyone on the committee held, community members did to reach this point. And again, it's how are we helping honor the people who look like us, who are often not highlighted in our schools, in our work, in what we're learning and what we're teaching, to give them that honor and to remove the names of the people who did the opposite, the people who decimated communities and who believed in things that really devalued and just treated people inhumanely. So I know that that's the spirit of the work. And I know that we will still have the opportunity to highlight that and to involve more people who are genuinely curious, who might have a certain stance on it now, but through this community work and through this dialogue could really get to a place of understanding, and just help us get to a moment when we can truly dedicate the time to reach that consensus and to fulfill the dream of what this was.
Gabriela, I think I've mentioned this already, but I'm incredibly humbled just for you taking the time to be here with us today and just to hear you out. Did want to allow just one last opportunity. I don't have any more questions. The only thing I'd like to say is thank you for serving our children. I really appreciate that as a parent, but yeah, I just wanted to kind of open the floor and offer you the chance to, you know, say whatever you'd like to say for our listeners.
Thank you. Again, I also appreciate all of you for your work, for this opportunity to share and to remind us to be human. I've been trying to do a lot of that work. And ultimately, I my hope is that we continue to elevate not only our understandings and our experiences and our stories, but also get people to feel motivated enough to continue this work. And that does mean coming together and holding each other when we are dealing with all of these issues, with the threats, with the pushback, with the guaranteed attacks that you'll get when you're in any leadership position. It's not even just the board, it's just in general. And I want to highlight that my community has been holding me. And that is also a very clear reminder of why we do this work and what helps me continue to move forward, keep my head up, stay motivated. But also just remind everyone and all of us that we're not doing this work alone. It is important to ask for help if you need it. And also just, if there's anyone who's ever interested in learning more, like, our doors are always open, and I want to be able to provide that for people, and keep it moving. So thank you for having me and for this.
Gabriela Lopez, president of the San Francisco Board of Education, thank you so much for your time.